Mother's Day is right around the corner, and in true She Pivots fashion, we're highlighting moms who've dedicated their lives and their pivots to supporting mothers. The iconic Christy Turlington will join us to talk about launching Every Mother Counts after pivoting from her 90s supermodel days. And later, the co-CEOs of Baby to Baby will share how they're addressing the needs for millions of babies and moms. So tune in and subscribe to She Pivots. New episodes out every Wednesday. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Join late night legend Jon Stewart and the best news team for today's biggest headlines, exclusive extended interviews, and more. Now this is a second term we can all get behind. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch it when you can, dropping knowledge from fatherhood to politics, shouting out comics, just paying homage. What's up, Tiff? Yeah, you know she ready. Chi-Town's on, speaking to the grown and sexy. Hey. We gon' laugh, cut up and kick it, and at the end, we leave it with just to lift your spirits, make you wanna revisit. Tell your friends, take a listen. Young folks say it's lit, old folks say we dig it. Hey. Can't no bitch do what you do. Can't no bitch do what you do. Can't no bitch do what I do.
Hey, welcome to this week's episode of Laugh and Learn. I am your host, Flay Monroe. I also have my beautiful co-host. You know her as Iconte or Toots, but her name is Bobby Clifford, who just celebrated her 39th birthday. That was your birthday present, Bobby. I allowed you to be 39 again. So that was
Thank
your birthday
you.
Present.
Thank you.
That's what we need to do. And we are so glad you guys are here. I want to start off this week with just saying prayers to the people that are all afflicted by the wars all over the world. I absolutely hate wars because at the end of a war, you never know what it was about. And so many unnecessary casualties happen. So that is our take on the war. I'm not taking sides on this. I just hate that it's all going on. And I want to say prayers to our beloved president, President Biden. I know everybody has their feelings about who they feel, how they feel about whom. But I feel a great presence of Biden, and I pray that he gets back to American soil safely and unharmed, because he's over there repairing fences that another president broke. I ain't going to get into that. We'll get into that another week. But this week, we have a very special treat for you guys. Oh, my God. So, you know, like, I'm a parent in comedy. We have come across another parent in comedy who is phenomenal. She is from Alberta, Calgary. That was that. I had something in my coffee.
Okay.
So we want to welcome to the show our very special guest this week, ladies and gentlemen. I want you guys, all my claimants and all the listeners out there, Laugh and Learn, to give her a thumbs around the applause. She is a fantastic comedian, a phenomenal parent, and a person that you need to get to know. Make some noise, ladies and gentlemen, for Ophira Eisenberg, ladies and gentlemen. Y'all clap for Ophira Eisenberg.
Yeah. Whoa!
That's us. Hi, Miss Ophira.
Hello. Yes, I grew up in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, which sounds like all right, that is
Thank
a place.
You.
But just to be clear, I left.
It's cold in Canada. I might have left too.
Yeah, I've been living in New York for almost 20 years.
Ooh, what brought you?
Yeah, exactly.
I guess stand up, really. I was toiling around in Canada, actually Toronto at the time, and everyone in Toronto kept talking about like the bigger scene in New York, and I thought, well, I should get there before I know what it's like to fail and have consequences. You know, I was still at the like really happy to have IKEA furniture point in my life.
Been there.
Yeah, I'm not going to say it's changed, by the way. I'm not going to say it's changed.
I wasn't sure if it was a boy or school that brought you. What got you into comedy?
You know what? I was just talking to another comedian that I'm on a tour with right now about how the first time I saw stand-up comedy was at a club in Calgary, Alberta, and I didn't like it at all. Like live stand-up comedy. I'd seen it on television, etc., but live stand-up comedy, and I didn't like it. I thought it was very male. I thought it was very hateful. I thought it was nothing to do with me. And this comedian said back to me, he goes, "But you still did it, huh?"
Well, isn't that what life is? When you see something that doesn't affect or doesn't work for you, if you get into it to make the change, so even if you get in comedy to make it more positive, but you said nothing affected you, and you reached out to other people and you found your tribe, that is what it is. You have to find your tribe in comedy, because comedy is subjective. You know, some people may like the mean and the rude. Some people may like the joy. Some people may like the fun facts, you know, the simple stuff. Animal jokes work with everybody. Animal jokes work with everybody, unless it's abusive. But I love that. I love that. I was going to ask you, so what was the scene like in Alberta, Canada, Calgary,
yeah,
different from New York? Because I love East Coast comedy. I love East Coast comedy.
Yeah. So I actually, the very first time I stepped on stage was in Vancouver. So as far west as you can go in the darn country. And it was, I had no perspective, but I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was very open. I was with other amateur comedians, and let me tell you, there was a lot of women. There was people of different ages, different backgrounds. It actually never occurred to me until much later that there was so much kind of like white male energy in stand-up, because a bunch of the amateurs that I was around, they were just all different. Like it didn't occur to me that it would be weird to start when you were 55, or that it'd be weird to start if you were in high school. Like it was just so much variety. So in that way, it set me up pretty good. And then I learned the other lessons later.
Comedy is definitely a learning process. Every time you get on stage, I tell young comics all the time, you will find something new about you, not about the audience, but about you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ophira, so we have questions that I want to ask you. So you're the youngest of six?
Yes. It feels like when I say that, I'm talking about being a child from a different generational era, because it's kind of rare that people have six kids rolling around.
Yeah. Oh, my biggest question is, if you was the baby of six, did you ever get anything new or was everything a hand-me-down?
Oh, my goodness. Everything was a hand-me-down. All my clothes, for sure. And on top of that, my mother, very old-fashioned, she was a very good seamstress. So even if things like were being handed down and they were the wrong size or my brother's, she would change them. She would just change them. On the other side, I had my Barbies had the most amazing clothes. My mother would make clothes from my Barbies, and I had fur hats for them and really cool, like green plastic see-through raincoats from all just the different fabric. Mm. And so, my Barbies had a high fashion that were couture. They had bespoke couture outfits.
Oh, That is so funny because your obsession was putting clothes on Barbie. My obsession was taking them off. Bobby, feel free to jump in here whenever you want to.
I know. I'm just listening to her talk about making clothes because my mom did it, like the Buttrix. Remember the Buttrix patterns and whatnot? And my mother did the same thing. She would take somebody else's outfit or stuff they were getting rid of. And she was one of 11, my mom. So they were poor. Yeah. So she would always be making people's clothes over. And so she would do that for me. And that way nobody else knew that had handed them down that's exactly. They'd look and go, that looks familiar. But she'd remake everything. I love it. She was never so nice. I'm going to have to tell her she was a miserable mother. She never made clothes for any of my dolls. I never had them.
You know what the irony of this whole conversation is that when we were big families, I didn't have a big family. My mama only had three, but my grandmother had like 9 kids. I don't think that we knew that we were poor. They were just having kids.
No.
And we were never hungry, you know. Things were tight, you know, but I don't think we knew we were poor. Now the internet makes you reminds you that you're poor.
Right.
You're less than. You're not as good as. That's what they make you try to believe. I don't teach my children.
No.
True.
You know,
it's
the one thing I knew that there was different is that when I grew up, it was a time of economic prosperity for my family comparatively. And so I was given ballet lessons. I wanted ballet lessons and I was given ballet lessons and no other of the kids had extracurricular activities paying for an extracurricular. Are you crazy? But I got ballet lessons. And I will tell you that somehow that ended up making me a stand-up because I went through all these ballet lessons from elementary school all the way through high school. And my school was pretty serious and I worked hard, but I was never great. And they would give out awards. And I remember at the end of, I think I was, 14, everyone got awards like best pirouette or amazing jeté or whatever it was. And I got Miss Personality.
Ooh, that's the you just showed up award.
Yeah. Nothing says you're not gonna
Good
be a dancer.
Try.
Yeah.
Oh my God, but it probably did get you ready because you were comfortable being in front of a stage, in front of people.
That and it built you a character because now everybody is given an award. So there's no distinction of who's the best, who's the second best, because everybody now gets, you get an honorable mention. It makes people weak to me. That's just my opinion. I like these kids need to work for it.
That's true.
We're glad you participated, but you have to work to get this trophy. But they don't have that anymore because everybody wants to be rewarded for nothing.
That is so true. And
it's true.
I also I also think like just the discipline of doing something all the time and maybe not being good at it as, ballet and that dance did not come supernaturally to me. My body was not, something like physical like that. There are people with just advantages based on how their genetics are put together. Mm-hmm. And the rest of us have to work really, really hard to just get okay. And let me tell you something, that is a good thing to learn for stand-up comedy. Because stand-up comedy requires a huge commitment and a lot of discipline. I think some people go faster. Some people start really naturally great. But at a certain point, you're all going to die. And you got to deal with it.
Oh, yeah. And any comedian worth their weight in salt would say, I've had some lousy nights and I survived it because that's what you have to do. It was one show. If you come take that whole component on, was like, I wasn't good. It was one show. You might have two shows bad back to back. Now, if you have three or more, you might want to rethink your profession. But
but don't you learn something though, guys? I mean, because I'm not a comedian. When you have those bad shows, isn't there something like a pearl that you can pull away and say, I didn't hit the timing right, or maybe for this you have to change your set for a certain audience? Because, you know, if you, neither one of you are too raunchy, but if you are doing raunchy things, you're not going to do it in front of a 7-year-old audience.
No,
it's like a lesson, right?
I think you have to accept the process of it too, which is its own kind of interesting mind shift, because I sometimes will have a string of not great shows at like a club, and I'll say to another comedian that I highly respect and look up to, like, oh my God, I got to like get through this rut. And they go, oh, you know, every once in a while, I'll just do a bunch of shows and I'll even go, I'll say to myself, am I even a comedian? And just to know that everyone's always going through that. And I think that's better because, like you said, Bobby, it makes you reflect and go, what's different? What do I need to change? Something's not working. I need to grow with this, instead of just going like, well, just keep doing it. It will work again.
Yeah, that is very true of fear, because a lot of comedians take on, and every show got to hit. And I love when I have a string of 12 straight great shows in a row. But then when that 13 will come, I'm going to allow that to have more power of me having a bad show than the 12 consistently good shows I've had. And you're right, Ophir. We do question like, oh, is this really what I'm supposed to be doing? Should I be a comedian? Because it's like that, you know, and for us who've been in the game for 20 years, it's still like that. It is October, and it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and we see in your bio that your mom survived breast cancer. So thank God.
Ophira.
Me.
Oh, you survived it?
Yes.
Are you? Look, I have to get mammograms too, Ophira. I hope they don't find a lump in my, it's a couple of lumps in here, but I think they like donuts or a biscuit or something. I'm not sure. How was that? When you were diagnosed with that, how was that?
I mean, you know, the non-funny side of it is that it broke me apart into pieces. I think because I felt a sense of intense betrayal. Betrayal of my body, betrayal of the world. Like, I was like, this is not my story. This is not how it's supposed to be. I don't want to deal with this. Being, you know, I grew up in Canada, but I've obviously lived in the US for many years. But dealing with the medical system is very hard. You have to stand up for yourself a lot and really wade through that. I will say that, you know, when I was eight, I went on stage a lot every time I could throughout all of it. And the stage became my refuge, because, you know, you're so active when you're on stage. You're so active. You know, people talk about live in the moment, be present. There's no living in the moment like you are when you're on stage. And I could kind of pretend I was what the old Ophira. Like, I wasn't ready yet to move on to whoever I was going to be coming up. I didn't know who that was because I was in the middle of it. But I could be the old Ophira, and I loved it. I loved living in this kind of suspended fantasy of everything's okay, you know? And you get the light. I'm sure many of your listeners know from listening to all your episodes as a stand-up, they often give you the light when it's time to get off stage at a club. And I wouldn't want to get off, because I'd be like, then I have to go back to reality.
Yeah. As a person who, a transgender woman who have breath, I want to tell you something. I want to tell you thank you for choosing to fight to live, because a lot of times it's mind over matter to people, because you hear something horrible and, oh, this is it for me. I'm done. It's not. You have to turn it around mentally, because the mind controls everything. And I love you. Thank you for choosing to fight and winning. Thank you for that. Because a lot of people just throw in the towel and say, it's over. I'm done. I'm going to die. This is it. It's never it. It's never it unless you choose for it to be it. So thank you.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. That is so nice to hear. And it is scary. And, you know, I feel like there is, I became very aware of, you know, that kind of life force in you where you kind of get, I don't know, I got a little angry. Like, I was like, I can't wait to get through this so I can make fun of it, and I want to write about it, and I also I just wanted I didn't relate to the pink ribbon campaign. I didn't relate to a lot of the stuff that was like, all right, everybody, you have breast cancer, throw in a pink bow on, hop on a bike. I was like, no, like, where are the people like me that want the, I don't know, goth version? Like, oh, let's all dress in black and have a bourbon shot and talk about how things are weird, you know? So I wanted to be there for them. You were so young too.
So scary.
I know. And out of nowhere, you know, I think they ply us with genetics and I didn't have any of the markers. So it just felt like, you know, and that's the truth of all so many things in the medical industry. You want answers. You're like, well, how did it happen? Where does it come from? And sometimes they just go, I don't know. Hard. That is so hard.
You got to be, somebody's got to be first.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to be first.
And how many children do you have up here?
I just have one, but he feels like many.
Well, you are older, right? So I had mine really young. So you have tons of energy. So having one that's a little, if I ever had one, I mean, my God, I'd have to take a nap and a snack just to get them out of bed. I don't know how you do it.
Thank you. Thank you. Flame, how many?
I have three. My pullout game and what it, my pullout game was not as tight as it is now. You learn. It's called trial by error. Trial by error. I kept getting caught up. But how much does your child did you take to use as material on stage? Because my children have become my greatest material from experience.
Oh yes, oh yes. I mean, for one, I think, I mean, it's a gold mine out there. If you don't use it, you are missing out. Yeah. And two, so I just so much, and I even host a podcast called Parenting as a Joke, which, by the way, you need to come on, where we talk about funny people, comedians, because, you know, this is a very non-traditional job we have with weird hours and what it's like to parent on top of that. So I use my my kid in my act as much as possible, you know, bearing in mind that I think as he gets older, I'll have to maybe pull back a little bit because I don't want him to ever feel like I'm talking about him on stage, you know? But it's a gold mine. And I also like the fact that I come from this perspective where I thought I was going to be childless by choice forever. I changed my mind and managed to get pregnant, you know, by a miracle and have a child. And I like talking about it on stage because I want everyone to kind of look at me and just think that it's cool and it's relevant and it's real. You know, because I think some people go, oh, like parenting humor, it's, I don't know, like not cool, right? It's like, especially mom humor, they'll be like, oh, it's not cool. And I'm like, no, it's totally cool. It's totally relevant. And you're going to laugh at this because it's part of the human experience. And I cannot tell you the amount of people that come up to me after a show and basically secretly just want to know all kinds of things. They're like, did you have fertility things? Like, people are so curious if they are thinking of having a family, like, and how are you doing with the night? So many questions. So I feel like that's good. I must be hitting some conversation that people aren't having.
And that is what a great comedian is to me, my opinion of Phil. Someone who can talk about stuff that is relatable to everybody. No gender, no sex, no size, no color, but it's relatable. So you are helping and teaching somebody. But my kids, I always tell them, as much money as y'all cost me, oh, I'm getting my money back on stage. I tear my kids up on stage. I tear their asses up on stage. I got to get them. They spend my money, I'm getting my money back. So if you guys are the bane of my material, if y'all are the basis of my material and it relates across the world, I'm getting my money back.
That's amazing.
And it's identifiable. I mean, I love that. That's the storytelling and the family storytelling. Like, that's what, when I first saw Flame, it was the They Ready special that Tiffany Haddish had produced. And I immediately connected as she was talking. I'm like, oh my God. Yeah. You know, so I think people, you know, I think the bulk of the people actually identify that it's relatable. As long as it's not too whiny, like, you're not like, poor me, as long as you're making fun of the situation or, you know, doing that. I think it's terrific.
Yeah, because the hypocrisy is, if we have children, especially like adolescents or teenagers, they're pretty much the same people. They look different, but they do pretty much the same thing. So that's why it's so relatable. We may call it something different, but it's the same thing. And they say the terrible twos. I say, no, honey, wait till they get 15.
I can't even imagine. I'm just dealing with an 8-year-old. Good luck. So I have no idea. But, you know, on top of that, I think there is this sort of framework, especially for, you know, a woman on stage, just identifying as a woman, that there's this idea that the audience needs to see you as a sexually viable product. And so sometimes when you talk about parenting, they're going to be like, oh, I don't see it as much. Yeah. So I'm also trying to be like, no. And I'm not also a like wine in the sippy cup. It's wine o'clock. Like, I enjoy a drink. Don't get me wrong, but it's not really that's not my tone. And I'm like, there's got to be other people like me who want something just a little smarter, a little different way into this conversation.
Yeah. Yep. It is great. That is great to relate. So, Ophir, when I'm on stage, when I do my hour, I do this thing at the end of like 45, 50 minutes. It's called, if you're not scared to ask it, I'm not scared to answer it. And maybe you should consider, because you're a great conversationalist, while you're on stage, after you finish your set, have them turn the house lights up and let people ask you real questions about the breast.
Yeah.
You know, about the breast cancer, about being a parent, about... It really brings your audience to you. Then they feel like, oh my God, not only did I go see Ophira, but now I'm a part of the show. It is so, and I do that all the time because people have a million questions. As opposed to me standing in line taking pictures and they want to ask all the questions, then ask it now and then I give you the opportunity, because I don't want to take no pictures. They got COVID. I don't want to take no pictures. Leave me alone.
That's wonderful. No, that's wonderful.
I know, right now it's scary.
Oh my goodness, every other person.
I think you would be great at that, Ophir. I think that, and I think that you would really help, because that's what as comedians, and I love what you said about when you're going through something, when your son is giving you a hard time, or you're having a bad day, when you go on stage, that is when your power kick in, because not only is it our therapy that we can talk to somebody openly about it, but we get a chance to just own the room, and it just makes all of that bad go away, because I'm like, I got an audience. I'm sitting my fat ass on a chair. And they listen to everything I say. That's a great place to be.
Yeah. You know, when someone, you talk about something that you're going through or someone else is going through something traumatic, but then they make a joke, it communicates that they're okay in some way, right? Because you have enough of this sort of hindsight. You know, comedy and stand-up and humor has always been part of that, showing that we're okay. And I feel like when you go on stage and you start, you know, this is just classic, when you start going through those hard things and finding the little twist in it, that tells your audience that you're okay. And you know what? They want to be okay. Yeah. They are so desperate to be okay with whatever they're going through.
That's why they're there.
And that is so true, Ophir. And I love that you know that. You know, I talk about this and tell people as young comics, I say, you have to read the room that you're working. I am not a huge Trump fan as far as his politics. But I love his antics. So when I go on stage, I don't talk about his political views. I talk about his antics, that he liked to grab women by the coochie. I'm like, please introduce him to me. Oh, I want him to grab me by man. Please introduce me to him. You know, just because if I'm working in a room full of Trumplicans, and I have I'm being on tour with Dave right now, his audience is probably 60% Trump supporters. If I go on stage and attack Trump, they will hate me. If I attack his political views, but if I attack his character that we all laugh at, I make it easy. And what you said about having a funny impact, you can give out information to people and you can go deep into the dark hole. But if you come out of it with a funny, they still hear it, but the impact is so much different. That's good shit, Ophira. That's great. I love that.
Yeah. Well, you're clearly the living example.
I love that you said that, because people forget. We got to get them past these titties, Ophir, when I get them. As long as you can get past this smile and these titties, we're good. But once you get past that, then you hear me.
Awesome.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Hey girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mother's Day is right around the corner, and in true She Pivots fashion, we're highlighting moms who've dedicated their lives and their pivots to supporting mothers. The iconic Christy Turlington will join us to talk about launching Every Mother Counts after pivoting from her 90s supermodel days. And later, the co-CEOs of Baby to Baby will share how they're addressing the needs for millions of babies and moms. So tune in and subscribe to She Pivots. New episodes out every Wednesday. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Speaking about being a parent, Ophir, I'm actually going to ask you, Flame, the same question. What would you say is the biggest, I want to hear on the big kid side and the little kid side, having a little one and trying to do this type of job, what do you find are the biggest challenges?
I mean, the hours are pretty intense because my child does not sleep in. So it's like, you know, in every parenting book you'll read, especially when they're really little, will be like, you need time for yourself. Just get up an hour before everybody in the family gets up. You're like, oh, so I should go to bed at 2 a.m. when I get home from my sets. And then I should get up at, what is that, 5? So just 3 hours of sleep for me? Of course. Why not? I need nothing. So the hours suck, but there's other things that, you know, are great about it because I have a very flexible schedule. Also, we can do things, and he can come with me to shows probably in a few years, not exactly watch the comedians, but I think that's an interesting insight into the world, which I never had. And, you know, there's a lot of flexibility and travel. But that, yeah, I feel like that is the main thing, is just The hours. The hours.
Yeah. Now, what is your support system like, Ophelia?
Other than my partner, my husband is, I would pay for it. That would be the end of it. Everyone else, my parents aren't around anymore, and my husband's parents are not in a situation to do any real childcare. Mm-hmm. And I moved away from my extended family. My husband didn't really have we are just like, it's us or we pay for it. So
yeah,
that's right. What it is.
I understand that totally. But what you said about taking your kid to the comedy club, I had a 3-year-old, a 3-month-old, and a 3.5-year-old. I would take them to the comedy clubs with me and sit them in the green room.
Yeah.
While I went on stage, because I had to get on stage. They would sit in the green room and, you know, I had to change my clothes or what have you. My children have been a part of my, my career life, their whole lives. So, you know, and I'm with you. I have no support system here. I moved from Chicago to Long Beach and I didn't know anybody. And my mom, I was not leaving with them. I wasn't leaving with their grandmother on the mother's side. The mother was out the picture. So it was just us. And I love, you just had to make it work, because when you're a stand-up comedian and it's in you, there is an itch that has to be scratched. And the only way to scratch it is on a stage with a microphone sometimes. And more often than not, when that itch hits you, it's like a crackhead. You get, well, I've never been a crackhead. Not yet anyway. I've tried a lot of other things, but not for that. When it hits you, you got to get out there and you got to scratch that itch, because it makes you, you'll go insane if you don't. And that's the truth. You will go insane if you can't get an audience. And the internet doesn't do it for me. Ophira, we're from the cup of the same car. I need a room. It could be smoke filled. I need asses in the seats, and I need to feel the energy. I do. I need to feel the energy.
Yeah. And, you know, the one thing that I think of, I have no hindsight on this yet, but another comedian, great comedian, Laurie Kilmartin, said to me that she was like, our kids get this unique perspective where they're going to see their parent who is in entertainment actually making a living from it, which I didn't have. I had no idea that you could make any, like there was, I had no anyone to look up to and go like, oh, that's a viable choice. But our kids, for better or worse, are going to be like, oh, maybe I'll do that. Because you can make a career and support people off of that. And then we will tell them, no. You pick something secure.
Yeah. And I love what you said about comedy being a white male-dominated field, which it still really is. It really is a white male-dominated field. The difference is, I'm not a white male, but I am a black male-female, and I plays no games, baby.
Yeah.
I'm a combination of everything. Yeah. So yeah, you got to come with it all, because I don't let you slide. But I do stand for when I'm a very strong advocate for biological women. And that is all in all aspects of my career and in life. And I do get a lot of backlash because of that, Ophira. And how do you feel? Has it changed? You've been doing comedy, what, 20
years?
Yeah,
almost 20 years.
Has it changed as a female comedian from what you see now? From what you saw back then?
So I just feel it has changed. And I feel like where we're at now, I think there is a lot of it that is better, but it's not across the board. I feel like it's just, there's more sort of pockets. Like, I think my best audience is as diverse in every manner as possible. That is like, I don't want to play to me. I don't want to play to parents. I don't want to play to white people or just moms. I don't want to play to a specific age rate. I want every age in there. I want people from every economic situation. Like, that to me, I love it when I always fight for tickets to be pretty inexpensive or have a sliding scale. Because I'm like, people should be allowed to come to shows for $5. They should be allowed to be in that room if they don't have the money. How do we get these people in the room? Because that is a good audience. And I perform in New York. I feel like it's pretty good, but there's still lineups that I'm on where I'm the only woman. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And I feel like nobody, in some ways you go, there must be a lot of backlash that there's just not more diversity on the stage in every manner. And then you just go, or does nobody care? And then I'll go to other rooms where the lineup, you know, everyone is just coming from a completely different perspective. And you know what? That's a good show. That is a good show.
Yeah.
So it's like better in some places than worse in others.
I hate shows with no women. I really don't care for comedy shows with no women. I'm I push that all the time on here because you have to have everybody's perspective. I want to hear, of course, I want to hear the men talk about the woman and this and that, but I want to hear the woman's version of it. I want to hear the opposite side of it because they, and which is what I do on stage because I am the man and sometimes the girl at the same time on stage. But I like to have a woman on the show because a woman's perspective is value, is valuable. And I think it has changed for women because it's what you said though. The pay might not be the same, but the what is the word I'm looking for, Bobby? When you see it more.
More representation.
The representation is better.
Yeah.
You see so many women now, and thank you, Joan Rivers, for that. Joan Rivers was. Thank you, Ruth Buzzy, for that. Thank you. What was her name? Who was funny looking to kill? Phyllis Diller.
Phyllis Diller.
They were in the trenches when they were treated badly and underpaid and overworked, or they had to sleep with somebody to get a position. And that it's not like that don't still happen, but they paved the way for so many women to Elaine Boozer to say, "Hey, we're here. See us." Whoopi Goldberg. They were out there, and they're still here. They made a way for so many female comics to now. Dominic, my only issue with some female comics is when the set isn't going well, they immediately go to therapy. Don't go to therapy because that shows fear. It does. Don't run to therapy. They'll go, so the set don't, the first two or three jokes don't land, they go to, well, you know, I'm having a hard time, you know, I'm just going through a divorce. Don't go to therapy. The audience does not care about that. Stay on that set and make them buy what you're selling. It's going to be rough sometimes, but make them buy. I make them buy.
Yeah.
I ain't going to therapy. My favorite line is, y'all didn't get that one? Fuck y'all. Let's go to the next.
supposedly, and I don't know if this is true, but Judy Garland, of all people, before she would go on stage, supposedly would hold either side of the velvet curtain, and to psych herself up before she opened up and did her show, she would just go, fuck 'em, fuck 'em, fuck 'em, and then, hello! And I think about that very often. I'm like, that's the mentality.
I think that builds such a strong resistance to you that I am here. Y'all paid to come and see me. Y'all paid to come and laugh with me. So don't let me get in my head to block what I'm about to bring, the joy I'm about to bring to this audience. And a lot of comedians do that. They worry about, what if they don't like me? I don't give a, I love that. I don't give a damn if you don't like me. I love me.
I mean, that's a huge, huge part of it. I feel like I'm still learning that because I was raised and whatever, just so approval based, people pleaser. Oh, is this good enough? How about this? Maybe if I did it this way, you would like me. Maybe if I was this way, you would like me. And so that's a constant hurdle for me to jump over, which is kind of like interesting because I still do that in real life, even though I combat it. But on stage, I live for authority, for being like, I'm in control. I tell you when to breathe. Yeah. I tell you when to clap. Let's do this. And you know, that's where I like, that's the ideal.
I had the backup of fear when you said that. I'm like, maybe she has a penis. Let me question. Does she have a penis? Because that is the attitude that I need some of these female comedians to have when they go on stage. Because sometimes they feel weaker standing next to the man. Absolutely not. You are doing the exact same job that he is doing.
Yeah. Plus, there's people in that audience that want to hear you. Don't take that away from them. They're actually there. Like, why?
Right.
Why would you already tell them that they don't, that they made a mistake? There's always going to be. We all are. I think as stand-ups, like experts in finding someone in the audience we can see, maybe if the lighting provides us only a couple rows, who is not having a good time. And you don't know. You don't know if they had a terrible day. If their idea of laughing is just a big thin smile. Like, I don't know. But you make that person all of your fears and all of your self-hate. And all of your failure and rejection, you put it all on that person instead of looking at all the other people that might be having a good time. And that's another exercise you got to work yourself through.
Yeah. You say you've been here 20 years over here. Are you a United States citizen?
I just became one a couple years ago.
April of 21, right?
Yeah.
How difficult was that?
Okay, so I have almost failed every test I've ever taken in my entire life.
get in. If I had to take a test to get in, I wouldn't get in. I'd be sitting on the border.
Me either, Bobby. I know I would fail.
Stella! So it was, I studied so hard, and you have to study from 100 questions, and then they ask you 10 in the room. And let me tell you, the questions I got asked were very simple. It was like, who, you know, who serves for the president if the president cannot serve? What is the name of the ocean on the west side of the country? I mean, they weren't very tricky, but I was in the waiting room, I remember, with a bunch of other people that were there to take the test. And I was like, why does no one but me have flashcards? Like, everybody else just seemed so calm. And I was going through my handmade flashcards. And I was so nervous.
I would too.
Yeah.
I always wondered what entailed becoming, what kind of test they gave you to become an American citizen. I'm like, well, what would you ask me? Who was the president? What year it was? I would have said Roosevelt, 1947.
I like the question that she just said, like, if the president's out, who would be in? I don't think half of the people today realize the peril that we're in without a speaker. They don't get that they're next in line, you know, even if the party is different. So I think I love that. I think we'd all should have to have some sort of test like that, whether it's to graduate high school, whether it's people just don't understand politics now. Not that I don't have great understanding for the intricacies, but for the basics, to just know the basics and how your government works, because it's really tricky. I don't know how it is in Canada. Is there a huge difference between the way the politics in Canada are or the way?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, because this is the parliamentary system, so it's more based on, there's many parties and based on majorities. But, you know, the Speaker of the House, as it were, the Speaker of Parliament in Canada was recently ousted.
I saw that.
So, I mean, there's the same amount, I would say, of...
His name wouldn't be McCarthy, too, would it?
His brother. So there's like, you know, and here I would say there is, and it's more in America now, but there is such a focus in a good way, I hope continually good way, on Indigenous rights and recognizing the peril that the Indigenous people have had to have been subjected to since, mm-hmm. you know, settlers came here right around this time of year.
Yeah. We just changed our Columbus Day in Massachusetts anyway, to which is where I'm from, to Indigenous Day. So they got a day.
They got a day. Yeah. So, I mean,
I'm seriously considering moving to Canada. If our government don't change, I just don't want to deal with that cold weather, because good God, it gets cold.
It is cold, by the way. I'm in Canada right now, and I looked out the window this morning, and I was like, how did I used to live like this?
It's so pretty, though. It's so pretty up there. Everything is so lush and gorgeous. And yeah, that's how you did it. And you didn't know any better. Like, when we're kids, we don't know. And then as your bones get a little older, you're going, oh, when you get out of bed, I make a noise. My dog doesn't even raise his head unless I make the noise. When I make the noise, he goes, oh, we're up.
Oh, that's the sound of breakfast. Breakfast is soon.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh, my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And, of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mother's Day is right around the corner, and in true She Pivots fashion, we're highlighting moms who've dedicated their lives and their pivots to supporting mothers. the iconic Christy Turlington, will join us to talk about launching Every Mother Counts after pivoting from her 90s supermodel days. And later, the co-CEOs of Baby to Baby will share how they're addressing the needs for millions of babies and moms. So tune in and subscribe to She Pivots. New episodes out every Wednesday. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver. And this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courtney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
As a comedian, we all have goals and we all have things that we're pushing for. Who would be your ideal team to be on a tour with?
Wow. That's a great question. You know, I was reading her book and watching her special, and I have been on tour with her and it was really fun, but she's just so different than me. Do you know Maria Bamford?
Oh, I know that name. Yeah, I know the name. I don't know her material.
Very,
very
different.
I think I've seen her in passing.
Yeah, storytelling. She does some characters, just wildly different. I just think, like, so unique. I have never had the chance to meet Wanda Sykes, but I have been obsessed with her for years and years. Mm-hmm. That would be incredible.
Yeah, Wanda is a great punch-up joker too. She's a great writer. She's a better, to me, she's a better writer than she is a comedian, honestly. But because she punched up one of my jokes on They Ready, and it was just instantaneous. And I love to be in a room with other comics, and they watch your set, and they actually listen to you without judging. And then they say, hey, can I tell you this, how to punch that joke up? Because a lot of comedians get upset about that. I'm not one of those. If you can hear it and you can make it funnier, give it to me because I'm going to do it immediately. I love that.
You know what I've even found every once in a while, Flame, is that a stand-up will pay me a compliment. They'll be like, oh, I really like your joke where you say blah, 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 blah. And they'll say it in different wording than the way I said it. And I'll be like, oh, that's the better wording. You just said in the way that I should be saying.
Yeah. And to me, that speaks volumes of to who you are, your character as a comedian, because if you shut down and you're not willing to learn because you think you've already arrived, you'll never get to the destination that you should get to because you're already there. Mm-hmm. In your mind, I'm already the greatest. So if I'm already the greatest, there's no room for improvement. There's always room for improvement.
Oh, I have so much yet to do. So much. The list is long.
Yeah. You know, that's one of my regrets that I never had a chance to meet and work with Joan Rivers. I think that Joan Rivers and I would have gotten along famously, and we would have been cut up like you wouldn't believe. You couldn't have been under 35 to be in a room with us because our language would have been quite colorful, like a costume. But it would have been great.
You know, I feel the same way, and I was close. I was pretty close to interviewing her a bunch of years ago now, and it didn't ever quite happen. And I'm always like, oh, it was so close, and it didn't happen. And yeah, it just makes me very sad. And I will say that, you know, my parents, much older, as I am the youngest of six, but they were just also older because my mom had me older. And when I told my mom, you know, when I was, I don't know, I guess 22, that I wanted to try to do stand-up comedy. I hadn't really done it yet. Her only touch point was seeing Joan Rivers in Las Vegas. And she was like, oh, like Joan Rivers in a bar? That's what she said to me. And I was like, yeah, that's the goal.
So you said you had a baby. Go ahead, Bobby. I'm sorry.
No. I said she must have had the vapors. Yeah. Is all he was going. Go on, Flame.
Ophelia, you had your baby. Your mom had you older too. Now you had your baby at 45. How old was
42.
Your mom?
Yeah, my mom was 42 and I was 42.
Oh, so.
Yeah.
Oh, so you stayed right there.
I know.
Oh,
I mean,
everything is just.
Yeah, who knew? That's like, sometimes it's like weird coincidence like that where you're like, who knew that would be the case? Or.
Now I'm going to really get it. Now I want to get into the meat of something, Ophelia. I don't mean to cut you off.
No, please.
Because you were diagnosed with breast cancer at 40, right?
Yeah.
Did that make, because I remember you said that you didn't have any children, you weren't in the cars, but did that make you really want to have a baby once you realized that you had breast cancer?
Okay, so my initial response to this would be no, but I've thought about this a lot, and I've really, you know, taken apart my emotions on it, and I have some hindsight. And I do think the answer to that, Flame, is yes, because I think there was something in me, and I've always felt this way. I've always, my husband brings it up all the time. He goes, I remember you always said to me, let's try to do every aspect of life that's positive and interesting that we can. Like, let's just try to do it all. Anything that's of interest and propelling us to a fun, new, interesting experience, let's try to do it. And I think in my recovery, I thought, I don't want to miss out on this experience in my life. If I can do it, great. If I can't do it, you know, I was like, I'll figure out if I want to go down any further avenues. But to begin with, we'll just try. And it was a little bit of a long road because honestly, I did get pregnant and I miscarried, much like, I don't know, I'm going to say something, a statistic not based in facts, 99% of women, even irregardless of your age. And I had a strange miscarriage in the sense that it was pretty rare, not dangerous, but it was called a partial molar pregnancy. So there were cells in me that could turn into cancer. So then I had to give blood to make sure that there wasn't a new cancer, hooray, growing in me for every week for 6 months. And at that point, I thought, I'm never doing any of this again, any of this. I never want to see a doctor. It was so dark and I thought, I can't do it. And then as a good storyteller, I thought, what would be the happiest ending to this story? If I could write this story however I wanted, what would be the happiest ending to this story? And I thought the happiest ending to my story in this moment would be for me to bring a child into my life and have a loving family. And so I was just dead set on trying to make that happen.
I love that. And I love that you have a healthy, happy bundle of joy. Listen, you're not by yourself. I had a baby at 41 and a half. So we were together. I didn't carry it.
Lucky.
But that is like really pushing the envelope for a woman to have a baby at that age, isn't it?
It's amazing. You know, I think obviously they have these lovely terms, geriatric pregnancy. I always enjoyed that. But every time they're like, do you want to do any testing? They just pull out these binders. Everybody else gets a pamphlet. You get a binder. And I do remember, though, seeing a genetic counselor to just go through whatever possibilities of testing. And she said something really compelling to me, which is that the data that they use, you know, because so much in our world has changed, that the data that they use is still basically 20 years old because they have to go through this data. And it was taken at a time where they didn't know a lot about the humans that they were getting data from. They didn't know anything about their lifestyle, anything about you know, were they smokers? Were they drinkers? Did they, whatever. So the data is not great. So she was like, we put all this stuff on people of a certain age or a certain background. She goes, it's based on not great data. She goes, you are providing genetic data that is going to help women in the future.
Hats off to you for going through with it and not finding a dark place. Man, you got a baby that you're so happy with. And I love what you said, that you told your husband that you guys were going to do everything positive, because the world is so parked right now on negativity wins and sales
always,
like you wouldn't believe right now. If it's negative, oh, it's the best thing. If it's somebody, a kid, eighth grader, who got accepted into a medical college, nobody cares. That is terrible to me.
It's horrible, the cancel culture that we're in.
I know.
Right now.
Can we?
It seems, I'm so glad that we weren't brought up in social media. The three of us were lucky that that didn't exist.
Can we go back to sex sells? Yeah. Can we just go back to that? Forget hatred. Like, who knew I would say this? Can we go back to sex sells?
I'm about to start my OnlyFans page. I'm going to tell jokes while naked. Why not?
Double naked.
I'm going to tell jokes while naked and erect. Look, naked and erect. Let me see how much money I make.
Oh, my God.
That's brilliant. That is true stand-up. Everything's standing up on this special.
Everything is standing up. That's what we're going to call it, the stand-up show.
Oh, my God. That is hysterical.
Now, keeping it standing up for longer than 20 minutes might be the hard part, but I'm just saying. See, all of that is bad. The hard part, standing up. Oh, my God. Okay, next up.
Perfect.
Bad flame. Bad flame.
I love it.
Ophira, oh, my God. I think you're so delightful. I'm sorry that I haven't had a chance to get to know you, but I'm looking forward to working with you somewhere. And I'm on tour right now with Dave Chappelle and with Tiffany. If we come anywhere close to New York, I am going to reach out to you to make sure that you are back.
Oh, my goodness. Please.
I definitely want
are you coming to New York? Not yet. You don't have a date yet? I know you will.
Well, they keep adding dates to the tour. So if we come close to New York and I'm on the show, I'll definitely make sure I invite you. But, I did New York. I did Caroline's. I was just there with Dave for when he taped the Madison Square Garden for 4 days for his birthday. And we did The Cellar. Now, have you ever done The Cellar?
Yeah, I do The Cellar. I'm part of that little world.
That was my first time going to The Cellar. I ripped it, too.
How did you liked it?
Oh, I tore it in half. Let me tell you something. The Cellar had never seen nothing like me. The Cellar had never seen nothing. I took The Cellar from The Cellar to the basement. Good God.
I know. It's that's a fun stage. I mean, they have four stages, but there's a real good energy there. And that is, it's always high quality. I love performing there because it does make you better, because you are going up with all the greats all the time.
And that is a very pertinent place to be, because if I'm working with, and I don't want to call anybody a substandard comic or just not a very known comic or kind of newish, you only have to be better than them. But when you work with monsters, you have to catapult yourself to be on the level of those monsters, or you will be completely inadequate. So I love the challenge of that. I love the challenge of that.
And also it makes, you know, I think sometimes we, you know, especially if you're headlining a lot and it's all your people in the crowd, is that you can kind of like walk down the garden path for the first couple minutes while you're sort of like, it's a little sorbet and an appetizer and an amuse-bouche. But when you're on those showcase sets and you just followed someone that slayed, you got to get up there and like throw it out there in the first 30 seconds. There is no time for a little garden party.
Yeah. And that's a great challenging point. And I know a lot of comics, big names, Dave Chappelle, like Dave Chappelle, Cat Williams, so many, Kevin Hart, so many, Chelsea Handler, they will put really, really funny comics on their lineup. But there are some comedians out here that the opener cannot be that funny. They have to be only okay or mediocre to make them look like the super giants. To me, I think that's no challenge. There's nothing funny.
No.
I need the meat. You be my meat so I can be the pot for the meat. But they don't look at
that's
me.
All ego. I'm not like that's that. All
you can
ego.
Be hilariously funny for me.
Yeah, you know, like I, as an audience member, don't you want your audience member to go, that show was amazing from the second it started to the second it ended, rather than like 20 minutes in, it got better?
Yeah. I love that. I love when I say that. Oh my God, I feel. I think we are. I told you we are kin. We're the same person. I'm just you without the coochie.
I know. We gotta hang.
I say that all the time. I say that all the time because if it's Ophira's show, and all the comics were good, and Ophira was maybe one. It was one of Ophira's off nights. She was just okay, but they paid to come see Ophira. It's still Ophira's show,
right?
Ophira's show was great. Now, the other comics might have been better that night, but it's still Ophira's show. A lot of people miss that.
Yep. Appetizer, main course, dessert. It all should be the best. The best. That's what I want.
It's the truth. Especially with, as you had said earlier, the prices of tickets, especially for the big ones. The tickets are outrageously expensive. Yeah. So I want... Yeah. I'm going to be the first person in my seat. I want to see all of the people that open, and I want all of them to be good. I want the most bang for my
absolutely.
Buck. So I agree with the both of you.
So, Ophir, I want to ask you two other questions. I want to know about Canada's healthcare system as opposed to America's healthcare system, because you were diagnosed here, right?
Yeah, in America. Yep, that's right. So, yeah, I mean,
yuck.
You know, I,
yuck.
It's hard. I will say, so I remember the moment I went to see a doctor just for nothing, a cold, when I first moved to America, and I walked in and I checked in for my appointment, and then they handed me a clipboard and the woman asked me about payment. And I think I literally said to her, that is so rude that you are asking me about money before I've even seen a doctor to talk about my care. Not understanding, that's the way it works. Like the idea of someone, it just was so foreign and bizarre to me and cold. I was just like, what are you talking about? And that's the whole America treats it like you're a customer, not a patient, right? Because you are
Cattle call.
You are a customer. And so, you know, there's a lot of things about the Canadian healthcare system that are problematic and broken, just like any healthcare system. But I will say this, this is going to be a very meaty two-line sentence or two-line paragraph, but I survived a very bad car accident when I was a child and almost died. And that, for most American families, would have bankrupted their family for the rest of their life. And it did not cost my family a dollar.
Wow. America, are you listening?
So, like, it was not an issue.
Bernie Sanders is, anyway.
Yeah, it was not an issue of, like, how are we going to pay to keep our daughter alive? It was just never an issue. And I'm here. Guess what? I made it. Okay? It's not like they were putting me together with duct tape.
And look, and keep surviving. Girl, let me tell you something. In this hour that we have done, you have survived breast cancer. You had a baby at an early age. You survived a miscarriage. You survived a car accident. You survived stages. Girl, that's gonna be the name of your 1 hour special. Total survivor.
I survived.
You survived everything. That is testimony alone.
Yeah. So why should I be worried about it if you don't like my joke?
And if you can't survive it, then you live in America. So you have no other choice. Good God.
Yeah.
Healthcare is super complicated. It's so you've got the single payer or the government system up there, and we just can't get it done. I mean, Obamacare was huge. The fact that we even slid that across, and there's still payment for it. Yeah.
Now I will just be totally transparent that what the Canadians complain about is that there can be long waits for certain tests because you are basically ranked on the severity of your case, and that these mm-hmm. and that the testing. So you know, if you feel you can now just pay for it, if you want it faster, you can pay for it. You can decide to make that choice, or you can be a squeaky wheel and get yourself pushed forward. I always say that it's like this. Because America is based on an insurance model and capitalism, America needs you, the American healthcare system needs you to be sick. The Canadian health system needs you to be healthy. And that's how things are run. Mm-hmm. Like, I can go into a doctor in America and be like, I have a scratch in my elbow, and they'll be like, do you want an MRI? Right?
Yeah. Well, that's because we demand it too, as Americans. You know, like, that's the... If you told my mother she had to do physical therapy for 2 weeks for the pain in her back before she gets the MRI, she'd lose her bananas. No, I have insurance, and I want, you know. So it's a super complicated,
it's a super complicated
system, especially with our pharmaceuticals and the insurance companies. Those are the people really making all the money. The system is flawed. You know, 18% of our GDP is healthcare. It's a flawed system.
Yeah, so I don't know.
Bobby works in healthcare. That's why she's so abreast of it.
Fascinating. Yeah, I mean, I could talk about this for hours. And I know some excellent people that work in the American health system as doctors and surgeons. And I have at times asked them different questions, and they have told me that on certain boards of hospitals, they've been asked why they're not, you know, hey, we really have to pay for these new crazy, you know, equipment we have. Why aren't you telling people to get more of this? Why aren't, you know, mastectomies cost a lot more money than lumpectomies. You should be recommending mastectomies more often.
That sounds like a for-profit facilities versus not-for-profit facilities.
Correct.
It's a business. It really has become a business. So, as you started the show by saying you really had to advocate for yourself. So you do, as a consumer, you need to go in, ask what you want, and keep pushing until you get what you need, especially because our bodies tell us stuff we know first.
Yep.
Yeah.
But it's a super complicated system here.
Very complicated. I mean, everywhere. I think you have to always advocate for yourself.
And I like my boo. Look, and I like my boo.
Exactly.
They're part of my ass. What am I going to do? Look, Ophira, second question is, what is your goal and desire for you as a comedian? What do you want to do that's huge that will make you feel like, I made it? It's that one gig that you'd be like, I made it. I am that comedian.
Well, I will say upcoming. So I'm going to say two things. One is upcoming, my pal and comic Anthony Jeselnik, you may know that guy, he is out touring, and he asked me to come join him on his show in a couple weeks at Carnegie Hall. So I guess I will check mark that.
Oh my God,
coming
that's
up.
Huge.
Can't
yeah.
wait.
Yeah.
But, you know, with the storytelling...
Practice.
With the storytelling stuff that I love doing and the stand-up, I have a whole show that I've been working on that's more of a solo show, one-person show kind of feeling about, you know, we were just talking about how I survived so many things. I have scars all over my body and just how they have shaped my identity and how I've accepted them and not accepted them and the stories behind them. Some are poignant, some are very funny, especially when I was sleeping around and deciding if I should explain some of the scars to people or if they cared. And how much of your flesh is your identity? And I want that on Broadway, my friends. I want it on Broadway.
I was going to ask you, did you want that Broadway or do you want that Netflix? I was just about to ask you that. I'm glad you said it.
Well, listen, Flame, if I have to go Netflix, I will. Okay? If I have to.
Well, Netflix, let me tell you something. If you got to go Netflix pays instant gratification with Netflix. Let me let you know that.
That's true. That's a good point.
Yes, it's instant gratification with Netflix. With Broadway, you still get paid, but it's, you know, every night. But Netflix is a one-hitter quitter.
You know what? I'm revising my goal.
I think it's going to be great. I think it's going to be great. Oh, well, no, you can do both now. Hear me. But if you get the Netflix first, you reach 190 countries, and then those people will fly in to see you on Broadway.
Oh, that's brilliant.
It's a step ladder.
Can you be my business managerial creative consultant, please?
Long as you can be mine, because I seem to be batting 1,000 over here. Good. This was such a delightful conversation. Thank you so much for doing this with us. I am so pleased with the conversation, and it was so informative and light. But somebody is going to walk away from this that's going to learn something more about themselves because of you, and I appreciate that. I really appreciate that.
Thank you, Flame. Thank you, Bobby. That's so nice. It was an honor. I was thrilled. Thank you.
And I will definitely get over to your podcast. Now, where can we find you? What's the name of your podcast? Give us all a credit.
Yes. So my podcast on iHeart is called Parenting is a Joke. Obviously, you can get it wherever you get podcasts, where I talk to different people who are stand-ups and working in entertainment about how they do creative work and raise children. So we will be talking about getting you on that immediately, Flame. Also, you can follow me everywhere at Ophira E, and or on Venmo at Ophira, if you feel like, I don't know, following me in Venmo.
Listen, when is that Carnegie Hall date coming? What date?
That is on November 10th.
Oh, it's soon.
Yeah, and they can get their tickets where?
Turns out Carnegie Hall, this is how the ticketing practice works. But they posted their tickets for sale 2 weeks in advance. So I guess early November, right at the end. Halloween, hop online.
That's Flame Monroe's birthday, by the way, Halloween. I was born on Halloween.
Happy.
No, Marcus Parker, who is me, was born in July. But Flame Monroe, I was supposed to be Flame Monroe one time for Halloween. I ain't gonna tell y'all what year, but here we are almost 40 years later. Good God. Titties and
39.
Jesus.
39.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, my God. Ophira, you are such a delight. Thank you so much. I love when we have light, pleasant conversations that are informative and stay in the game. I want to see your name in the big lights. I'm coming to your one-woman show on Broadway. Cause guess what? I'm a survivor, too. I survived Chicago. That was enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I look forward to seeing you on stage wherever I can. Maybe we'll see each other at the Cellar one of these days.
Yes. And whenever I come close to New York City, if I'm with Dave or with Tiffany or on my own, I'm going to reach out to you.
Please
do. I want you at the show. And if I can get you on the show, guess what? Go out there and give us 15. Let's do it.
Awesome.
I love it. I love the parent story, because there's so many parents that are having a hard time with their children. So I love it.
Yes.
Well, tell me and I'll take the train in.
Yes. You're close.
We're going to fly you on private jet, Bobby. It's only 20 minutes. Good God.
You need a wide-ass tail to it.
Ophira Eisenberg, thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a round of applause for our very wonderful special guest, Ms. Ophira Eisenberg. And follow her on her podcast or iHeart or anything that she's doing, because this lady going to teach you something. See, that's what comedy is. A lot of y'all missed it. Not only is comedy funny stories, but comedy is meant to teach you something about you that you're afraid to say publicly, but then you think in it, so you learn something about yourself. That is great shit right
Absolutely.
There. I see it. I see the bad word, Brittany. I always say the bad word.
That's all right. We love you for it.
I know, right?
What we're thinking.
Thank you,
thank
my beautiful
you.
Girl. We appreciate you. Ladies and gentlemen, here at Laugh and Learn, what is our message, Bobby? We're not trying to get you to change your mind. We are only trying to get you to use your mind. Because why, Bobby?
Because a mind is a terrible thing to waste.
And some of y'all are wasting y'all minds and my time, and I'm not here for it. We appreciate you. Follow Bobby Clifford at Bobby Clifford on Instagram, and we're at Clifford Bobby on Instagram, at Bobby Clifford on Facebook. Follow me on all social media platforms at Flame Monroe, and follow my girl, Miss Ophira Eisenberg, on all her social media platforms. Hear me and hear me well, ladies and gentlemen. We are in a crisis. The world is in a crisis with wars and sad stories and woo-woo-woo. Find some joy in your life that will keep you sane through all of this crazy. You have to find whatever makes you happy. I don't know what it could be. Everybody has different goals, different possibilities of what makes them happy. I'm happy with a black and white and a cheeseburger. I'm telling you. Whatever makes you happy in your life, you have to find that joy or you will go crazy in a crazy world.
Yep.
It is 10 minutes out of the day to find that joy. Find that joy for them 10 minutes, because the rest of the day might be screwed up. But if I found my joy for 10 minutes, guess what? I got 10 minutes of joy that day. Let me see if I can get 15 tomorrow, because the goal is to get to the next day to get happier and happier and happier. The news and the world will make you sad. I ain't a sad bitch. I'm the happiest fag you ever seen in your life. I see it. Thank you, Miss Sophia.
Don't miss an episode of Laugh and Learn. Listen and subscribe on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts. Laugh and Learn Podcast is a production of the Black Effect Podcast Network and iHeartRadio. Our executive producer is Tiffany Haddish. Our theme music is by the one and only Chrissy Payne. Thank you, guys. This is Flame & Row. Don't forget to laugh, listen, and learn.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Mother's Day is right around the corner, and in true She Pivots fashion, we're highlighting moms who've dedicated their lives and their pivots to supporting mothers. The iconic Christy Turlington will join us to talk about launching Every Mother Counts after pivoting from her 90s supermodel days. And later, the co-CEOs of Baby to Baby will share how they're addressing the needs for millions of babies and moms. So tune in and subscribe to She Pivots. New episodes out every Wednesday. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Join late night legend Jon Stewart and the best news team for today's biggest headlines, exclusive extended interviews, and more. Now this is a second term we can all get behind. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.